Well, hello there, and welcome. I'm so glad you're here. This is the Venice Voice. On this episode of the Venice Voice podcast, I will bring you a conversation that I had with Casey Kalmanson. Casey is a singer-songwriter and an actress, and just an all-around beautiful person. We talk a little bit about her band, her big hit song, why she became an herbalist, and what spirituality means to her. But before we begin, I just want to remind you that this podcast is for you. So if you'd like to be interviewed, or if you'd like to talk about an upcoming event or a product that you're working on, shoot me an email at ron@venicevoice.com. Now, without further ado, here's Casey K.
Are you sure you're going to be all right with that microphone there?
Does it look all right?
I hope so. Hey, here we are, Casey K. Casey Kalmanson, how's it going?
It's great. How are you,
Ron? I'm doing great. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you coming here.
Of course. This is my absolute pleasure.
We were talking a little bit about some of your creative influences, and I know that you have a wide variety of things that you're interested in, including you're an herbalist, you're a musician, and you have your own sort of spiritual and creative practice. I know that's a lot, but where does that come from?
I think it comes from wanting to get closer to source, whatever that is, in each practice. So for music, it's just the source of my own creation, my own voice, my own messages that I want to spread. And with herbalism, it's getting closer to the source of actually Gaia and of the earth and of her and everything she has to offer us. And so I think it's just really being able to tap in and channel that.
So for us lay persons, what is Gaia and Earth is
Gaia
female?
Gaia is like Mother Nature, essentially. Okay. It's like a fancy word for Mother Nature. But yeah, that's the truth. It's like this spiritual heart of the earth. And Gaia is kind of, her in all of her glory.
Another thing that I think that this is something that I wanted to tap into. So I'm glad that you brought it up, but you have this just lovely outlook on life, and I think it's a combination of things, and I'm just guessing here, but the way that you approach who you are and what you do just has a positive spin on it all the time. Is that a conscious choice, or were you inspired by a member of your family, or where does that come from?
I'm really lucky to have an amazing family and to have been supported in being an artist and being creative and exploring myself and exploring my own interests my whole life. So I've really comes from this like extremely nurturing place in my family. And then beyond that, you see a part of it, but there's always struggle. There's always shadow. And to my optimism, there is a shadow side that is not necessarily bad, but it's those lows in being a creative. And the only thing that's really going to propel you into continuing to create is either getting yourself high again, not literally, but, you know.
In my case, that would be literal.
So. Me too. No, I'm just kidding. But, and riding that upward wave, because everything ebbs and flows. So, but I think the latency with which you can go from like a down to an up, I really do work on shortening that. So that is a conscious practice.
And what does that entail usually on a daily
things
basis?
Things that I love to do. So today I was really lucky. I got up and I surfed, and that put me in an amazing mood. And I know for the rest of the day I'll be in a great mood. Yesterday was not a great day for me. I had just ups and downs, questioning certain things. And you know how we go through the whirlwind in our mind. But working out, like getting the blood flow, always really, really helps me. Laughter, sunshine. It's so easy to be in this kind of like place when it's summer and we just had solstice, and it's like you're bubbling up already. And writing always, even if I have nothing to say, just kind of showing up for it and just saying, okay, well, I'm going to write for 30 minutes, an hour, showing up for your work, sitting down at the piano, grabbing your guitar, whatever your vessel is, to just know I'm showing up and something hopefully will show up for you as well.
I think that there's something in the ground here. I really do. There's so many like-minded people who are around us that have that same type of outlook. We are so blessed that we have an opportunity to live and work where we do.
So blessed.
And it sort of radiates from the ground. This place, you know, besides the fact that there was a big monetary incentive to build this town, he also wanted it, Abbot Kinney also wanted it to be a place for creative expression. And it has maintained that since its inception.
For sure. I mean, it basically was created to be a theme park.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, like, oh, this is going to be a Venice theme park, you know, and it really has held on to that vibrationally. I think, you know, people are creative here. And even if they're not musicians or photographers like you or actors like you and both of us, they're doing something creatively in their walk, like in their path. So if they're
without
a business person, it's just a... Yeah, and obviously, like, I think the ocean breeze helps, and the proximity to the ocean really plays along with that. So it's really magical.
It is. It is. Yeah, even down to the design. I read somewhere that he had designed the streets to face where the sun sets.
Wow.
So as we walk down, especially in this little golden triangle section that I'm at, if you walk down Altair or even Rialto here, during specific times of the year, the sun literally sets right down in the middle of the street and illuminates the palm trees.
Wow.
So it does have this sort of magical golden hour hue to it. Not to mention the fact that we're just surrounded by creative people.
Just
all over the place. Yeah. A lot of them. And you know, and it has manifested itself recently in the whole tech boom. And I'm going to be talking to a lot of people that are in that area as well. But as far as you're concerned, I really admire your music.
Thank you.
I was listening to your website. I just listened to a few of the tracks on there. You know, kckmusic.com, in case you ever want to go. Really awesome stuff on there. There was a track, Body Language, that I was listening to before we started recording. And you just have this incredible, soulful voice. Have you always been singing?
Yes. Well, as far as I can remember. Yeah. But yeah, I've always been singing. Choirs, musicals, and then got into college and I actually studied theater. And then I had a jazz minor and jazz voice, and I really kind of took that and ran with that a little bit more than I did the theater right out of college. And then, yeah, just started making my own music, and that kind of just opened up, you know, again, going back, like I just showed up for it. I decided that was the thing that I was going to show up for, and making music, being in studios, being around creatives, and then other doors open, and it seemed as though it was like there was an ease, not that there is all the time, but there was an easefulness at which these opportunities were coming into my life. So I kind of just followed that.
There's so much to learn. I mean, when I was younger, it took me a while to have that sort of open, optimistic ideology in my life. You know, I struggled with whether or not I was going to be able to just show up or if those opportunities would open for me. I always saw the closed door.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the doors opened.
Well, this is...
That's why I don't have any doors in my place.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I, now that I live alone, I don't have doors in my place.
But that is such an actual, you know, beautiful manifestation of this ideology that you kind of have.
Yeah,
I
don't see closed doors anymore.
Yeah.
And since, I mean, it's kind of an odd sort of viewpoint, but doors have always been open since I started practicing that. And it really is a practice. It's honestly just something that I integrated into my life on a daily basis that just makes me feel like there's endless opportunity, and there is, and why not me, and why not anyone who wants to follow their dreams? It absolutely is out there, and I think that you said it in a nutshell. That's what I showed up for.
Yeah.
If I'm going to show up for this, and this is what I want to do, then that's what I show up for.
Mm-hmm.
And those doors, if you will, tend to open. Somebody said something to me earlier today. It's like, if you love life, life tends to love you back. Usually.
For sure.
Usually.
1,000-fold. It's the best return on your investment you'll ever get.
Doing things that you love.
Yeah. Doing things that you love with people that you love. And it's not always going to be sunshine and roses,
rainbows,
you know,
and,
yeah.
And rainbows coming up.
You know, once it gets serious, you know, things, money gets moving, things get working, but you have to always go back to that touchstone of just like showing up every day, even if it's not your best day or whatever it is. It's just, it's that compound interest of just showing up for something you love every day and just knowing that, you know, things will unfold.
I'm just going to breathe that in for a moment and just let that settle. It's my daily reminder.
Yeah.
Do you have a meditation practice or a yoga practice or anything like that? Or is it just sort of your own, whatever you show up for?
Surfing? Yeah, exactly. Surfing, it could be yoga one day. If I need to meditate and drop in, I do. I'm not a rigid person when it comes to routines. I like to get my body moving and feed myself really good food and drink tea. And outside of that, you know, I'm flexible.
It's pretty simple.
But it's simple. You kind of have to just, yeah, like I used to be really rigid. Like I have to wake up for yoga. I have to go to this thing, this high intensity. And then my body actually started to talk to me and was like, okay, no. And I'm not, you know, an older person, so I'm still agile, but it was telling me, you know, that's too much. Take it easy. Maybe just a beach walk is good. Maybe this will be your meditation. Maybe that, you know, meditation can be playing guitar. So if I don't have time to just integrate all of these things, just being a little bit more flexible and gentle with yourself instead of being like, oh man, I didn't make that class, or I didn't do that thing, or I didn't, you know, do my whatever pranayama breath or something.
You know? I had to, you know, this is something that I learned fairly late in life, is that I have to cut myself a break. You know, I integrate a lot of the same things that we talked about. You know, mm-hmm. I love cycling and I'm on the beach a lot and I work out and like, but if I don't get to those things, I'm not kicking myself and saying, oh, you didn't do that, and mm-hmm. that's terrible. I kind of have to be my own best friend, you know, and give myself a break and say, at least we did one thing today and we'll do the next thing the next day. It doesn't really matter all that much, you know, as long as we continue to practice some self-care on a daily basis. And even if I miss a day, then that's okay. I can do it the next day. I mean, I used to kick myself a lot when mm-hmm. I wasn't following a rigid schedule that I had set for myself, or this didn't happen the way that I wanted it to, so that's bad. But it doesn't have to be that way. And I think it's a lot healthier for me to, with, you know, for lack of a better phrase, give positive reinforcement to myself on a daily basis, because, you know, I have to be my own best friend.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important. And having self-care looks, like you said, it's different for every single person. But self-care is something we neglect all the time. And sometimes you're really going against your own, what your body is asking you by being in this rigid routine. I once had this woman say to me, because I don't remember what she was, what her purpose was in my life, but she said, I was complaining about not having any time. Like I was just booked this thing after this thing after this thing. And my days were just packed full of stuff that was meaningful, but wasn't completely my purpose. And she said, you know, if you have way too much stuff going on, there's just no room for the miracles to slip in. And I've carried that and I've been like, you know, create more space for miracles. Show up and hope for a miracle. But, you know, it's not going to show up a miracle can't show up if you're just like going from this place to that. You know, you have to get quiet, slow down, and get purposeful.
Beautifully said. I've also articulated it in a way that was taught to me by a guy that I used to do a podcast for. There's this gentleman named Dr. Arthur Chang, and he calls himself a religious scientist. And he said, he's a very interesting guy. He's a Chinese Jamaican guy.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, he's Chinese, but he grew up in Jamaica. So he has this very odd accent, which is a combination of those two things. And he asked me a question. I would go and do interviews with him and talk about spirituality. And he asked me straight, he's like, Ron, what is the most important... It's a terrible
it's a hard accent.
It's a terrible accent. It's a terrible impression. But this is what my brain thinks he sounds like. He's like, Ron, what is the most important moment? He's like,
sounds Cuban.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where this accent came from. I'm going to stop impersonating him. He said, it's this moment, and always have the mind of a beginner.
Oh, yes. Beginner's mind, for sure.
Because if we have gone down the path at all, then we may have missed something. He said, integrate a daily practice of always having the mind of just starting. Be okay with beginning. And you were talking about not allowing miracles to come in. I often get into a habit, and I know a lot of people like this who are mired in today's information-filled world mm-hmm. where they feel like they have to put stuff out all the time. And that, to me, has blocked stuff from coming in mm-hmm. because I'm putting so much energy out that it doesn't allow room for stuff to come in. So I have to start with this sort of blank place daily. For me, I've really been trying to, and actually doing, a daily meditation practice. And I try for 20 minutes, but if I don't get there, it's okay. Sometimes I can only do 2 minutes. But being able to start with a blank canvas of sorts has allowed other things to come in that they just sit down in front of me and I don't even have to try. It's like the things that I wanted are just like, oh, here you go. Mm-hmm. Now that you're not talking so much, now that you're not reaching so much or putting so much energy out there, I can be seen because I allowed my brain to be quiet for a while, to begin and to be okay with not knowing.
For sure.
And there's a real comfort for me in not having to figure everything out.
What a gift.
It really is.
It's a gift.
It quieted my mind. Mm. I mean, it was a really huge lesson for me to be able to just sit and be okay with right now. And I mean, it's easy for us. You know, I have a lot of people that we've talked about, that I've talked to who don't have it as well as we do. I mean, we're privileged. There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
And so it may not be as easy for everyone, but luckily for me, I've been able to quiet. Mm-hmm. And learn to practice being quiet. And it's just been so valuable for my overall well-being and for the things that I want to do.
I get it. And it's not that easy for everyone. You know, I do have conversations with other friends that work downtown in, you know, private equity or something. And it's a completely different thing, but there's still work there for them. And everybody has, like we said, life doesn't look the same on anyone.
Yeah. And I get the sense that you've kind of been on this quest for a very long time, and that probably led you to your interest in herbalism. Mm-hmm. Is that the correct term? Are you like a licensed herbalist now?
I am a certified herbalist, and I have, you know, some good experience under my belt with working with plants and medicinal herbs and our California native plants, actually, and how they can help heal. And
you mean besides cannabis?
Yes, actually, mostly non-psychoactive plants. However, cannabis is a whole nother podcast.
Yes, yes, we could have a long conversation about that, I'm sure.
Exactly.
But what are some of the most valuable native California herbs that you've discovered?
Oh, wow. Well, there are so many that are beautiful. We have white sage here, which is so great, not just for, you know, burning, and people love to smudge. And if you are listening and you do like to smudge white sage, I would implore you not to use like your smudge stick. In fact, just burning one leaf at a time, because it is an endangered plant. Fun fact. What else do I love? That's mugwort. We have a lot of amazing mugwort that grows here, and nettles grows here, and elderberry tree.
And what are some of the medicinal benefits of those herbs?
Okay. Well, mugwort's a wonderful dreaming herb, so you don't even have to ingest it. You can have a mugwort, you can have a little, you know, thing under your pillow or some dry leaves, and you kind of, it really opens up the dreaming world for you. So you have vivid dreams, and some people I find don't dream at all. And so I find that to be a really wonderful way to like exercise my imagination. I pull a lot of stories for songs from dreams. So she's a great ally for me in that. Also really great for women.
So
and
herbs are female as well?
They come through as different incarnate. Like some can be an androgynous spirit. Some can be but you know, I like refer to them because they're my friends.
I see.
You know, I give them
give
personas.
Them genders.
Yeah,
give
I give them genders, and yeah, we talk. So
that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice.
We have an open dialogue.
Well, they tell me, you know, tell me lots of secrets.
Well, I'm sure that that's not just a flippant remark. I'm sure that you do have conversations in a way. I mean, there is an open communication with the earth.
Absolutely. I mean, the earth holds vibration for us. And we have to be connected to that. Again, going back to source, like we have to be connected to that source vibration of the earth. When astronauts go up into space, they actually have a pad in the spaceship that has the frequency of the earth, and they have to charge themselves on it in order to stay alive.
What?
Yeah. So,
there's a pad with the frequency of the earth in the space station.
Yes, because they have to have this grounding energy. And have to be pulled, or else you can die. Full circle, like we're a type of, we are from plants. Without plants, we wouldn't survive. So we can't be completely taken out of the soil, just like a plant can, or kind of dies.
So for long-term space travel, Elon Musk is going to have to put something in that Mars.
Yeah, and I don't know, so I can't speak to like.
Yeah,
the,
I'm not saying that
the energetic.
But you're saying that as space travelers, we would have to take part of the Earth with us.
Yeah, we would have to take the frequency. So there's a certain frequency that it actually vibrates. There's this like, it's a wavelength, and it, you know, you have to kind of ground yourself onto it. Yeah.
Wow, we could have such a long conversation because this is something that I have discovered kind of on my own, and I'll admit it, I'm not the most well-read person.
I'm sitting here and you have stacks of books right here.
Yeah, but I haven't read them all.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to it.
Those are the podcasts that I've done. I actually did a podcast for all those books and I had to interview all those authors. But I didn't read all of them because they're not.
You still got time.
Yeah, I still have time.
You have time.
But I'd love to have more of a, and we can talk about it more now, is the connection to source, mm-hmm. is something that sounds kind of hippy dippy.
Yeah,
I have
it is.
Some conservative friends. I have some deeply religious friends who do not fully understand what I'm talking about when I say that we are connected to everything. Like, we absolutely are part of this planet and we are part of the universe in ways that we do not fully understand. Mm-hmm. There are vibrations, as you say. There's also cosmic rays and light that we don't see and sound that we don't hear that mm-hmm. is going through us all the time and absolutely binds us to this place. And when I am aware of that and cultivate that connection, I feel better. I feel more centered. Mm-hmm. I feel healthier. And the further away I get from that, the less comfortable I am, the grayer the world looks.
Right.
And so it's, you know, in some circles, it'd say you'd be cutting yourself off from the sunlight of the spirit.
Mm, I love that.
So I try to connect to the sunlight of the spirit on a daily basis. And that goes along with what you're saying about how, you know, these herbs and connection to nature. I mean, I've talked to so many people who's like, I have to connect to nature because it connects me to the things that God made,
Exactly.
Instead of what man made.
For sure.
And I don't, you know, I personally don't necessarily feel like a whole person if I don't do that.
And so for you, that, you know, getting closer to the sunlight, getting closer to that light that you talk about, which I think is so beautiful, that looks like what for you?
It was what Dr. Arthur taught me. He was a big proponent of meditation, mm-hmm. and finding a way to create an image in one's mind of a beginning. And he said, you're an artist. And he said, use this analogy, these two analogies. One is, in order to begin, a painter has to build a canvas. They have to put the wood together, and then they have to stretch the canvas over it, and they have to do that work before they can begin. So we have to, or I have to, in my mind, create that blank canvas first. And sometimes that's a whole process of meditations, of just being able to erase, to allow that energy to come in, to stop projecting stuff out and allow stuff to come in. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, he was like, you know, he's a religious man, and he takes the through line of all religions and talks about some of the things that everybody believes that are religious practitioners. And one of those is that God is infinite and omnipresent, which means he's everywhere and, mm-hmm. and endless. So how could any one person understand that? So you don't have to understand it. It's only about seeking. There is no understanding. There's only seeking and connection. And so he's like, the power of God, whatever that God is for you. God is just a word. It can be 150 different other things. It's just, it could be very much like electricity. There's an infinite amount of power in the universe, and it manifests itself in all kinds of ways. Light from the sun, light from this socket, light that's going into this computer system to create these sound waves. It manifests itself in a lot of different ways. So a prayer can be like an extension cord. And when I quiet my mind, I just plug that extension cord into that power and complete a circuit, mm-hmm. so that it's complete, so that there's information coming in and then there's stuff that's going out. It's like a breath. So just for me, creating that blank space and then plugging into an energy that I'll never fully understand, that's endless, sort of solidified what I try to do on a daily basis, which is just plug in, mm-hmm. to something that I'll never fully understand.
Yeah.
It just makes me feel like not alone and afraid. It makes me feel like I'm connected to something bigger than myself. And in many ways, it has opened literal and metaphorical doors in my life because I wasn't putting so much energy out,
mm-hmm.
being so structured.
For sure.
And killing myself over the things, the results that I didn't think that I was getting, when really I had to just stop fighting and allow me not to know all the answers, mm-hmm. and just to plug into something and be simple, you know, and just continue to do the things that I love to do. And I'll tell you what, when I do those things, and I know that this is true for you, it's as easy as taking a breath. Mm-hmm. It just happens. You know, that play that I just produced that I did, it was just like, this is exactly what was supposed to happen.
For sure.
And it was the most well-received thing that they had seen in a long time. And it was a beautiful experience for me. And it was just because that's what was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're just open yourself up to receiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how it manifests for me. It's like kind of that daily practice.
I love,
you know,
that.
That's really cool. I know that there are a lot of like-minded people in our world that are creatives, that are into music or theater or whatever. And the ones that have this kind of ideology, I think, make better art. Mm. I do. I think that their art it comes from a pure place. And when I hear your voice, that's the sense that I get. And I could keep talking, and I probably will, about how you were talking about how you had this jazz influence, and then you also had this theater influence. As far as musical interpretation is concerned, when I hear your voice, and I highly recommend anybody who's listening to go and listen to Casey Kay sing, because it's amazing. You have this musical interpretation, which is just beautiful. I mean, I listen to a lot of singers that don't have the interpretation quality, and you have this jazz quality. Do you think that it's a combination of all of your disciplines, or was it just a natural gift?
I definitely think people are born. So I'll rewind a second. I do teach voice as well. And so I get this question a lot, you know, can I learn to sing even though I don't have a good voice? Or, which also goes back to like whatever mindset you're framing your world in, like, okay, you already told yourself you don't have a good voice. Like, that's your first mistake. But I do think people are born with tone, and the shape of your face kind of really dictates some of that. So I think it's a combination of, you know, the shape of my face, certain tonalities, and then, yeah, just training. I've been with the same vocal coach who I now teach her. I apply her theories since I was 10. So I've been like with her for, you know, like 18 years studying and training your voice. It's a muscle, you know, it's like playing guitar. It's anything. So I really do have good control over it. I can create the sounds that I want to create. But I do feel like my voice is an expression of my soul. And so when I do the work on myself and in whatever discipline, it really does draw back to that. And you can hear that. Sound is just another frequency, and it never goes away. Sound never goes away. So anything you put out into the world, it will remain as a frequency forever. So
wow, I never thought of it that mm-hmm. way. It absolutely is.
It is. Yeah. And your own frequency. So your own voice
mechanism
for
it's
your
a healing
body.
Tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically, it's like, you know, when people use their own body weight to work out and build muscle, it's like using your own voice to kind of heal yourself. And it has its own special vibration, its own frequency. So,
and how does it heal the body?
Well, it's a chamber. So it kind of echoes and creates frequency and can break up sickness and can break up energetic, you're holding energy in your different energy spaces in your body. So it can help break that up. I mean, I know a lot of people use drumming and use didgeridoos in more healing practices when it involves sound and rattles. And it's all to just kind of create energy and frequency and break up whatever negativity you're kind of holding. So I do believe that the voice can do that. Your own voice can do that. Hearing someone else can do that as well. People all the time, you know, speak about
like a mother's voice.
Yeah, a mother's voice, just singing in group.
Sure.
Chanting.
Have you ever done any of those sound bath therapies?
Yeah, those are super cool.
Yeah,
I love sound baths. They're cool. I mean, I don't frequent them, but I've been to a few, and they're definitely experiential and very relaxing. I went to the Integratron in Joshua Tree, which is a really trippy experience because the whole thing is made of wood and there's no metal anywhere. So metal echoes sound and, you know, makes sound bounce off of things and does kind of weird things to trap the sound. So this place is completely a dome out of wood, and they play crystal bowls. And I had a really crazy experience in that sound bath, unlike anything else. It was almost an annoying sound, but then I did feel certain darker things like moving away from my energy. I don't know. I can't even explain it. It was a very trippy experience, but I do recommend that.
Well, I'm imagining on a molecular level, mm-hmm. sound vibration making our very cells act in a different way.
Sure. Yes.
So I think that it probably has a connection to us on a very minute level.
Yes.
Like there might be different enzymes or proteins or molecules within our body that will react differently or may heal, if you will, under the influence of certain sound vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's possible?
Oh, 100%. And there's studies out there, which you can dive deeper.
I like the studies. They studies. They did some studies. I'm sure that there are. And I always sort of stumble onto these things. And then I find out that there's all this information about the fact that this is true.
It's so true. And I implore you to, you know,
do some more research.
Use the internet. As
that would require reading and research, which I'm not good at.
But they have done studies with, there's like this apple core study, or I think it's like a slice of an apple. So somebody took a few different slices of apple and put them in different jars,
uh-huh.
and then would have people in their life, like if you had a friend come over and they were in a weird mood and they were just complaining, they were like, okay, go complain to the apple. I know this sounds crazy.
It doesn't sound crazy to me. I love this stuff.
Okay. So the woman sent her friend, like, go talk to the apple about it. Okay. So this one apple only got complaints. One apple got like worry. One apple got something a little bit more mid-level kind of shit. I can't remember. This is why I look
mid-level
it up on the
shit.
Internet.
I want to know what mid-level shit is.
I know, me too. And then this other apple got
all the happy.
Got your sexy. Got
ooh.
Sexy.
Ooh,
so
sexy.
The sex. And then a month at long, they looked at all the apples, took pictures, and like the sexy apple is still like completely intact. The complaint apple is crumbled, like just molding and disgusting. And then the other ones are kind of a little bit better, maybe, but it's pretty cool.
Something in between.
Something in between, you know. So there is definitely, you know, there's some serious energy held in your words. So that's why always good to, you know, be impeccable with your words. But then in your voice, and that's why certain singers and certain projects just feel like really divine messages, and like you're kind of, they're plugged into source and they're really channeling stuff that's outside of them.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yeah, look
stuff.
Up the apple.
Yeah, I'm going to look up the apple.
The sexy apple.
Well, also the sexy apple experiment.
You'll find it.
You'll probably get some porn sites.
I hope you do.
Well, it goes along with the evidence out there about people talking to their plants. There's no question that plants behave, grow, and are healthier when you give them positive reinforcement.
And
period.
Sing to them. Exactly.
And sing to them.
Singing to your plants.
Do you sing to your plants in your backyard?
A lot of the times.
I know you have a big garden back there.
Yeah, I do. Especially when I'm like first putting seeds in.
You sing to the seedlings?
Oh my God. I sing to the seedlings. I water them. I always tell them they're sexy. I do.
Okay. I'm a seedling.
You're sexy.
I'm getting planted right now. What do you say?
Oh, my little sexy little baby. I don't say that. No, I'm just like, welcome to your new home. You know, I hope you do really well here.
You're going to be the
most
beautiful,
the most beautiful
strong
radish.
Ever.
The best radish in the world. I mean, you know, it seems crazy, but it's actually such ancient. These kind of practices have been going on forever. This way of sharing story, sharing words, sharing vibrations is actually way less common now than it was a long time ago when, you know, communities were smaller and we were more tribal level.
We're thinking outside of ourselves too much nowadays.
Well, yeah, like you said, we're putting so much out and then wondering why we're not receiving and wondering why we can't make decisions. Well, it's this overstimulation and then this lack of, we don't have a satisfaction with our choices because there are so many choices. So whatever you choose, you're just not going to be satisfied because you're like, well, I could have had that thing or I could have had that.
Yeah.
So
I believe, and I'm sure that there's studies out there, but I believe that we as humans haven't evolved fast enough to take the information in that has been given to us. I think that technology and the information and the way that we're plugged into technology so all-encompassingly now, that's a terrible phrase or not even a real word, but the information is coming at us so fast, I don't think that we're capable of absorbing all of it. And that's why we feel overwhelmed and not able to make decisions and all those types of things. I think technology has evolved faster than we thought it was going to. It's unhealthy.
Yeah.
And there's one other thing that, I don't know if you've ever seen this documentary called I Am. It's a really great
I think I have.
There's a guy, he was a a big Hollywood director. Yep, his name was Tom Shadyac.
Yep,
and he was talking about the heart study, about how the vibrations from the heart absolutely do affect everything around us, and the positivity and negativity in our lives that we put out absolutely affect people, places, things, organic things around us, and it emanates out in all directions. And, you know, I never really fully understood, you're talking about sound waves, but I think that this was also true in some of the things that he was saying about heart waves, because the heart puts out a low pulse.
For sure.
And that sound can be distinctly, it can be felt by other living things around it. And he did this little experiment. I think that there was two electrodes or two sensors across the table from him, or one sensor. It was across the table from him, and he wasn't connected to it. And the guy was like, okay, think of something that makes you angry. And he's like, oh, my agent makes me angry. I don't like that. And then the meter went one way, and he said, what do you love? And he said, well, I love my children. And the meter went the other way. Mm-hmm. And it was just because those feelings, those vibrations were being transmitted across the table to this sensor.
For sure. Everything carries energy. Like, everything. We're made up of it. You can't escape it. So yeah, it's going to hold whatever frequency your heart's giving it. Our brain waves are also equally powerful, and it's this, you know, beautiful balance between those two that really sets us on our course. The heart, the sacred center can be beautiful.
The sacred center.
Yeah, your sacred center, your heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where did you hear that phrase? I've never heard it called the sacred center before. Although there's endless cave paintings where they say the brain isn't the center of the body, it's the heart. The heart absolutely gives more information to the brain than the brain gives to it. So it could be our sacred center. It probably is.
Well, you know, just in terms of, I think I pull that phrase from like more just chakra work. So that is kind of another term for what we call, you know, what we talk about as our heart chakra. It is our sacred center. And in my practices, that's what I always refer it to, just because it really is sacred. You know, you can put things in front of the altar of your heart and then they really show up for you.
I'm just going to absorb that for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to place things in the altar of my heart.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it can be whatever, but it's also just like you do that for other things, like their prayers, it can be multitude of things. To keep in balance is an offering to your heart.
Do you think that you've manifested everything in your life, or do you think you were just open to it? I mean, you're one of those people that I admire because of, let's just say, where you live, the relationship that you have. I mean, I know your boyfriend well, or pretty well, and he's a solid, good-looking, hard-working guy, and you have a beautiful home, and I'm sure it's not perfect all the time, but from the outside, it looks like you have this amazing, beautiful life. You got this beautiful house in Venice that you guys just got, and I know there are people that strive to have that.
Mm.
Was it something that you just... Did you always want to have that life, or did you just kind of open yourself up to happiness, and then it came?
I think I opened myself up to happiness, and I also think I just,
You just went out and captured the guy and said, you're going to...
Well, we had been friends for a long time, and I wasn't really happy I was struggling before I moved to Venice and decided to take that leap of faith. Because I grew up here. I grew up in Hollywood, and then I slowly have moved my way west, which, you know, has been big because my whole family is up in West Hollywood, and I'm very...
Which seems like miles away now that we leave here.
I mean, you have to have your passport. Like, it's like eons. So, you know, but I was living in Westwood. I was just in this like funk. I didn't feel like I could walk anywhere. I didn't feel like there was any contemporaries around me. But I was scared to move out of my place because I was in a really good spot that my mom owned, and I was paying I had a good HOA, and that was what I had to pay. And it was like, I could support myself here doing what I wanted to creatively, and it wasn't a big deal. And I was like, you know what? I just have to take the leap of faith, move somewhere else, move down to Venice, get close to the beach. That was the only thing I knew I wanted, is to be close to the water so that I could surf more. And just maybe that would lead me to happiness. And the second I decided to do that, which obviously doesn't seem like a huge thing, but I'm a Taurus and I'm very like stuck in routines. I'm very earth. So it was a lot to like uproot. So the second I took that leap of faith, I found a great place with friends. I met a great guy. My life kind of really turned around because I just took one step that my intuition was like, just do something. Like, you know, this isn't working. That's not working. Just do something. So sometimes that's not moving away. Sometimes that's whatever it is for other people. But that really was moving down here was such a catalyst for me to embrace this life that I really wanted. It was like, I visualized it. I saw it. These good people came into my life. A lot of other extraneous people that I didn't need kind of moved out of my life. So I had this space for things. But it's not perfect, obviously.
Yeah. But is that also where musically things changed for you as well?
No. I've definitely tried to give myself the excuse that like I have to be in a certain place and I have to be somewhere that's really inspiring and I want to take this trip to this place and go to the desert and write and go to the jungle and but honestly, your shit shows up for you wherever you go. And if I wanted to be a writer and if I wanted to do things, I was going to be able to write in a bathroom. I was going to have to write wherever it was. It wasn't like, oh, I'm moving to Venice to capture inspiration for my music. And I ended up meeting great people down here that are creative and are in music. I feel really inspired here and I feel like my bubble has gotten smaller so I can output more. But no, I wasn't motivated to do things career-wise. I kind of was already doing that and had my feet in the ground in that realm of my life. And then I just felt like everything else wasn't super spinning for me.
And so the everything else part sort of came into focus a little bit once you decided to take that leap of faith.
Yeah, exactly. And I really wanted to stay in LA just to be around my family. I have older parents and I want to be in their orbit for as long as I can. And so Venice really felt like the perfect landing place for me to have that, you know, more coastal life that's relaxed and slower, but still be able to drive 40 an hour and a half to go see them. So it's really paid off. I feel so lucky. Sometimes literally the only prayer I have is just like, thank you and such big gratitude for how things have really unfolded.
Yeah. And you became a homeowner?
I did. I became a homeowner.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
I don't know.
Especially down here. I mean, you guys obviously are partners in this thing, I would imagine.
Well, you know, I think that was part of it. Like, you get a boyfriend in real estate and then all of a sudden you end up with a house and you're like, what the fuck? So I assume like if I had a boyfriend who was like a fine artist, like I'd end up with like a shit ton of paintings on my wall or something. So it was part of that. And then also wanting to have ownership of not pay rent anymore. So some loans and some begging and some help from people, we were able to pull it off, but it was definitely, yeah, it's not.
It's a magical little place.
It's super magical. I love it.
I love the fact that you have a traditional bungalow in Venice and it's in a quiet neighborhood. It really does seem like it's even separated from Abbot Kinney.
I mean,
it doesn't really have a huge influx of homeless people or like cars parked around that don't live there. It's really a little oasis in there.
It is. It's such an oasis. And I am like, oh God, I wonder if it's ever going to change.
Are they going to tear down the house next door and build a three-story monster?
I know. Well, I think that's not real. Well, that's the thing is, you know, my whole block is where we have like small original houses, craftsmen and all the neighbors, like right when we moved in, they were like, hey,
what are you going to do with this place?
That was the question that kept coming up. And I'm like, look, I spent all the fucking money that I have. Like, I will not do anything with this place. Like, it's just, and I also am not someone who, I don't value indoor space. So it just, there's no value for me in like building a three-story house that's gigantic and ugly, in my opinion. I don't like modern homes, but, you know, it just, for me, I think, and it's also a reflection of our culture. Like we are now valuing indoor space more than we value outdoor space.
I 100% agree. And I think that that's separating us from everything that we were talking about before.
Yeah, everything that goes back to that, you know? So for me, it's so nice because I can't have that much stuff because the house is small. It feels nice. It's like, it's really about the garden. And that's really what I'm about. You know, I love my garden. I love to be able to have that relationship with a piece of land. You know, it's just, I feel that's what I feel the most blessed for, is that little outdoor area. You know, it's like, it's just amazing.
It's really cool. It's, and you really have that little offset former garage, which is now a creative space.
Yes,
and
yep.
It's just, I just love your place, and I'm so glad that you found it. Let's talk a little bit more about your music. Okay. You have a solo album.
I actually don't, but I'm working on one.
Okay.
And it will be out next year.
Oh, sweet.
I don't know if it's going to be an album, but it'll kind of be a string of singles and stuff that I've actually been holding on to for way too long, as I had other things going on and other projects I was working for.
So a string of singles, meaning that there are different things you've collaborated with other artists, and it's not necessarily all your stuff?
I think it's actually going to be mostly just me. I might collaborate with a few producers, but mostly it'll be self-produced. And engineered and mixed and sung and everything by me. That's something I've been really wanting to do and have not felt the space in the past like year or two to do. So I'm really excited. I'm going to dive in this fall and really see where I can get things.
I'm looking forward to it. And you said that other things have sort of not gotten in the way, but has taken up your time, mm-hmm. like collaborating with a lot of people. And I know that you work as a songwriter and arranger and producer with a bunch of other different people.
Yeah.
How did you get into that initially? Was it just...
It kind of all started hanging out at studios back in the day. You just
showed up at a studio and started hanging out there?
I met one guy who owned a studio in North Hollywood, and he needed a singer that sounded like Fergie, which I don't know if I sound like Fergie, but at the time, Fergie was all the rage, so... I went in, started singing on his tracks. I was like, oh, this is cool. I really like this. Started writing my own stuff. And then I was like, I really want to do this more. I started shifting my focus away from, because previously I was doing more stuff on the road, touring, doing plays and musicals in like North Carolina and stuff like that. So I was like, I want to be here more and get into music. And then just like one thing after the next, little job here, little job there, you know. And teaching has always been the underlying current to, you know, help create stability financially. But I've also really loved teaching too. So yeah, and then I wanted to put a band together, I think 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, with some of my favorite musicians that I had met along the way, and we did, and we created a little 4-song EP and didn't really think much of it, and then it did really well for us, and one of the songs kind of went a little viral for us. So, you know, we went on tour with that and it became a thing. You know, we didn't really think it was going to be a band, or I didn't know what it was at the time. I just, again, took like a leap of faith and said, I love this music. I love these people. And it's definitely changed form in that 2 years. We have other collaborators that have come on to the band, but it's definitely taken up a good amount of time and also opened a ton of doors for me. You know, it's funny how when something does well, like everyone comes out of the woodwork and you're like, wow, this is so much easier. You know, you just have something that did well and then people come to you, which was a new experience for me, because before that, I was really like knocking on every door, hustling, figuring out any way I could do it. Singing on this track with this DJ in Europe, writing for this pop person and a lot of European stuff I did. And then finally, you know, this really felt, wow, this is amazing. And it was also the first time I had done anything with streaming, because previously I had just put it on iTunes. And so this was my first experience. And I know most first experiences with streaming don't necessarily go like this. So this has definitely colored it for me in a really beautiful way. But yeah, just seeing how you can really make some good money with streaming, and it can support an independent project. And that was great. That was really great. So,
and the band is Little Monarch.
Yeah, the band is Little Monarch.
And the song is No Matter What.
No Matter What was our single. And we have some new songs that are out this year that just came out the past couple months, which are great. And we're going back into the studio to write some more stuff. And we took a little tour this year, which was great.
Where did you tour?
We toured West Coast. We did LA. We did a hometown show, which was so great.
I think I was there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hello.
Hello.
And we did San Francisco, 2 shows in San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and then back to LA.
That song, No Matter What, I've if you're listening, go to YouTube, watch the video, listen to the song. It's a lovely song. I played it for another friend of mine, and he said, this sounds like the millennial anthem.
Yeah, I love that.
It kind of feels like it. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't like the word millennial anymore. I think it's overused. Mm-hmm. But for a young person, say somebody in their 20s who has this altruistic idea of what life can be, I think it talks about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, it says, you know, just get your car and quit your job and go have a life.
Go
you know,
life.
Go experience some stuff.
Yes, that's kind of our message overall is like, you know, no matter what, just kind of put one foot after the other and, you know, don't let it get you down. And that's really what I always want to create with anything I put out musically is this hopefulness, this positivity, which can also jump into, you know, a sadder song or something slower, but really realizing the power of, you know, upbeat stuff, not just musically, but thematically upbeat. And yeah, how powerful that can be and how helpful it can be. I've had so many people reach out and like, hey, I struggle with this and this has been my song I put on every morning and it helps me through the day. They have depression or whatever. That's the biggest gift from that song ever. Just knowing that, you know, words on a page in a computer can translate and can reach other people. It's so inspiring. And I was at that point at the like 2.5 years ago when I wrote that song, I was like, you know what? This is the last thing I'm going to do with music. Like, fuck it. I'm fucking done. This is bullshit, you know? And I had made money and I had done this thing and I had been on this record and I had written for this person and it was all good, like little, you know, collecting shells in a cute little jar, but it never felt like a really stamp of approval. I never felt like that, you know? And then this song did well and I put no money behind it. It was like, I didn't do, you know, it was like we were talking about when you just let things go, let it go. I just let it go. I was like, fuck it. I had no expectations. I had low expectations and it completely exceeded that. And so, you know, now I just am like, whatever, you know, if it does well, it does well. It's a democracy out there. So,
well, it's so inspiring. And the way that you began this story about how the band came together, you just wanted to work with people that you love to work with so that you could have a positive creative environment and do the thing that you love turned into something that was incredibly inspiring and helped people. That's a story that I've heard so many times from people who are successful in what they do, whatever it is. And I never believed it for a long time. I just didn't believe it. And then I started listening and just taking those actions to surround myself with people that I love that are doing the same things that I'm doing and that I want to work with. And it has manifested itself in many, many great ways. And if you're listening, I hope you hear that story and maybe do some of the same stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we've got a finite time on this planet. We really do. It's a finite time. It was something very inspiring that I heard on a different podcast. And the guy was like, do your big thing right now.
Absolutely.
Do your thing. If there's something that you've wanted to do, and you know, part of it is this podcast for me. I mean, I had this idea a couple of years ago, and I just never did it. And it's just something that I've always wanted to do. And I remember his voice clearly in my mind. He's like, don't wait. Do your thing. Do it. Whatever it is. And there's many inspirational speakers out there that have huge followings. And the message is the same across the board.
Totally.
Find what you love and do it and maybe just have a little bit of faith. And that's just a lovely story about that song. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a perfect example of how that works.
It really works. And sometimes you do have to hit rock bottom. That's why, you know, I'll talk to people or...
That's when you become willing.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's when you finally let go. That is the beauty. So, you know, I think that is such a beautiful place. You know, when I have a friend who has come to me and they're like, I really don't know what I'm doing with my life. I'm at rock bottom. I'm like, yes, that is fucking awesome. You are in this. I want to be there too, because I know I'll like write an amazing song or something, you know, because there's healing in that. Like that's the medicine. The medicine is like in that moment where you're in that pain, where you're in that struggle, where you're in that like low point and you don't know how you're going to dig yourself out of this hole. And something beautiful happens if you just kind of jump, if you just kind of say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have some people in my life who have gone through those rock bottoms, but I also have some people that are just naturally able to just take the next right action. They're just actually able to say, no, I'm just going to do this. And they don't think about it. Mm-hmm. They just do the stuff and manifest all kinds of things. They don't have to necessarily be in a lot of pain. They don't have to have, you know, huge obstacles in front of them. They're just like, in some ways, ignorant to failure. they just don't even think about results. They just do stuff because it feels beautiful. And then all of a sudden they have this beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's like, God, we all tell ourselves this fucked up story, like that everybody cares. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Like literally nobody cares. Like,
yeah, no one.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, you did a thing. Yeah. No one gives a shit.
No.
So do whatever thing you want to do because no one cares.
No one cares.
In the most beautiful way.
All. Yeah,
but like
exactly.
In the most beautiful way.
Exactly.
And then honestly, like you will know when they care. Like you will know and it will be significant. But before that, like no one cares. So do whatever the fuck you want. Be weird. Do your thing. Like you want to, whatever it is, just do it.
Yeah. That's another very powerful lesson that it took me a long time to learn. I mm-hmm. have a lot of younger friends who are in their 20s who are extremely inspiring people that have their finger on the pulse of that idea that I'm going to do what I like, because all of a sudden when I do what I like, I find like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And a community sort of comes around them. It just kind of grows up around them because they're interested in certain things. And they just blindly go forth. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of just ignorance of failure. It's ignorance of anything. They're just like, I'm going to do what I like to do. And that's it, you know, and then beautiful things happen because of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. I mean, it's an interesting lesson for me. I mean,
yeah,
not having to figure things out. Just doing stuff that I love to do has been extremely valuable. And I was one of those guys that felt like I had to figure everything out. I mean, I was a competitive chess player when I was a kid. So if I didn't see 12 moves ahead, I wasn't playing the game. You know, I didn't want to get into stuff that I didn't see the end game. If I didn't see the results and a clear path to that, then I'm not even playing. Mm-hmm. Even if it was something I really loved. I was like, well, I can't do that because it's too complicated. What I didn't understand was that I just had to take the next step in the path. And from that place in the path, you might see the next step. But yeah. I couldn't see any more steps unless I took those first few.
Yeah. Each little step is a success in and of itself. People try to get to the top of the staircase when they don't realize that each step in the staircase is success, is
Absolutely.
A small goal.
Yeah.
Again, I mean, compound interest. It's just, one little thing after the next until you have something bigger. And also, you know, knowing that we're really lucky and in this place, like in California, especially,
we're so privileged.
We're so privileged because not everybody can just take their days and do with them what they choose and be creative and be a woman that wears, you know, whatever you want and speaks however she wants and drives a car.
Yeah.
You know, there are really places in the world that doesn't happen. So I think from like this, just the start of it, it was like, well, especially because I'm in this place and we're in this place, especially because of that, you have to do what you want to do because you're living for those that also can't have that expression, that don't have that freedom, that don't have the, you know, the finances or whatever it is to create this thing and put it out there, or the courage. It could just be courage too. You have to create for others too. We're all part of it. Like we are all the same thing. And I think, you know, you were going back to having a hard time expressing that to people, or, you know, some people don't believe that. And it is true. It's just, it is so true. Like it's a closed system, our atmosphere. So everything that's trapped here, everything, and we're all water, we're 80% water. So the water is recycling in through our atmosphere since the beginning of time. So we literally are all the same because we all hold water that maybe was held by some other vessel thousands and thousands of years ago. Especially now after this podcast, we're definitely all connected in ways that we don't understand.
And we may never
and
understand
we may
it.
Never understand.
We may never understand it. Well, listen, we've been talking for a full hour.
Oh,
I can't
wow,
even
shit.
Believe it. It's so much fun.
I hope we've said some stuff.
I know we said some stuff. I have no idea if anybody's going to understand it.
Perfect.
I have a feeling that this is probably going to be my first episode in the podcast.
Love it.
And I couldn't have asked for a better person to talk to. You said that you might be open to playing a little song.
I'm definitely open to playing a little song. Not sure if it'll be something that I just love to play or something I actually wrote.
Okay. Well, we're going to cut for a minute and I'll set up the microphones and we'll see what comes out.
Sounds good.
So this is not one of my songs, but I love this song. And I just feel like playing it today. So that's what it's going to be. This is a Corinne Bailey Rae song called Like a Star.
Just like a star across the sky, just like an angel off the page. You have appeared into my life. Feels like I'll never be the same. Just like a song in my heart. Just like oil on my hands. Only to love you. But still I wonder why it is I don't argue like this with anyone but you. We do it all the time. This look I can't describe. You make me feel like I'm alive when everything else is a fade. I know you're always by my side. Heaven has been way too long. Can't find the words to write this song. Only to love you. Still I wonder why it is I don't argue like this with anyone but you.
My goodness, that was so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was so great. I really appreciate you, Casey. Thank you so much for coming today.
Oh my God, it was my pleasure. Any excuse to hang out with you, talk to you about music, life, creating, anything.
Well,
always
we might
down.
Have to do it again.
Super
I'm thinking
down.
About having recurring guests, and I think that you're like one of my like recurring guest candidates now.
Oh, I'm pleased.
As long as you bring Elvis.
Oh, duh. Elvis will vote yes on me coming back.
Elvis, by far, cutest dog ever. Yeah. If you're listening to this, go to Elvis the Multi-Jew on
Instagram.
Yeah,
Elvis the Multi-Jew. Yeah, you know, just
by
little.
By far, the cutest dog ever. I might even have to post a picture
have
of
to.
You guys on the podcast page.
Shameless
on Instagram.
Plug, of course.
Shameless plug for Elvis.
For Elvis, of course.
As he should be.
I mean, he's the cutest.
Casey K, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I just want to say thank you once again to Casey Kalmanson for taking the time to speak with us today. I really enjoyed speaking with her, and I hope you enjoyed listening. If you want to follow her on Instagram, her handle is HeyKCK. And also, you can follow her dog, Elvis, at Elvis the Multi-Jew. If you want cuteness, that's the place to go. Also, Casey's going to be doing some solo performances, and one of them is right here in Venice at the Pacific Resident Theater Performance Space. If you want to check that out, go to pacificresidenttheater.com. I think it's coming up in September. It's definitely worth the visit. Now, before I leave, I just want to remind you that this podcast is for you. So, if you want to be interviewed, or if you want to mention an upcoming event, or talk about anything that is of interest to you, shoot me an email at ron@venicevoice.com. And we'll see if we can get it on the show. Thank you so much again, and tune in next time. We'll have another interesting guest that has something to do with this beautiful little area of the world called Venice. We'll see you next time.